Okay. Baruch Hashem, it is Monday, September 11th, 2023. And for the next 5 minutes, I'm turning it into Sunday. Only a Rebbe with powers from the Shemayim can do this, but at my age, Baruch Hashem. Yesterday's shiur, I kept on thinking after class, some of the people here, there were a lot of outsiders, and they said, gee, Rabbi Shechter, it's funny, he eats a chagavim, locust, and doesn't drink milk. And if you don't want to believe that he eats locust, you're more entertaining. He sent me a link to the what is it called, YouTube. And there he is eating locust and checking how he will enjoy. He's checking whether it's cooked in oil, not in oil, and he doesn't drink milk. So again, people were sort of with a smirk on their face. I have to tell you, Rav Heschel, by no longer than anyone, I am probably the only one alive who can tell you about his parents and his sister and his aunts and uncles. We grew up together. My brother is 2 years younger. My brother was his chavruta for many years, elementary yeshiva, high school, college. Heschel, Rav Heschel, to me he's Heschel, but let me give you cover if I can, Rav Heschel. He is an independent individual. That's the key to understanding him. He takes certain stands, and no one can push him around, whether he's right or wrong. Baruch Hashem, there's what makes Torah so fascinating, that when you learn the first Mishnah Brachot, you have three different opinions when you can say each Shema. So I don't have to tell you, Machloket is part of our existence. And this is Rav Heschel's personality. And Ein Hachinami, he can eat locust and he doesn't drink milk. And you envision the Rav not drinking milk? But I mean, he had an ulcer. I told you, heard the story I told you yesterday with the Gabbai, who were my own students. And when Rebbe said, here's a dollar, get me a quart of milk. And the guys, the dummies are whispering, what milk does he want? You know, by the 70s was already colleges. No, damn good milk, but I know you. And can you picture the Rav eating locust? Then I don't care what they told you in Lakewood, I cannot picture the Rav eating locust. But Rebecca, I'll tell you two incidents I had with him, with Heschel. And one, I argued with him. Again, I can't go into detail. I can lecture on it. You know, I lectured for over a year. You have no idea. My lectures on Yom Tov Sheni from years ago brought in millions of dollars to stuff. I picked up someone in Beverly Hills, right near Rodeo Drive, and I don't want to go further now, but he loved the Sheyurim and brought millions of dollars into Israeli families who needed help. My daughter, Taina, you know, became his Gabayit Shel Tzedakah. So on Yom Tov Sheni, you know, the Rav, I heard with these ears from the Rav time and again what his father told him, the name of Reb Chaim. Yom Tov Sheni has nothing to do with your membership card. I'm an Israeli. I'm an American. Nothing to do with that. It has to do, look at your feet. And if you're standing in Israel, it's runway. If you're standing in Teaneck or Muncie, where Natan comes from, it's 2 days. Plain and simple. And this was the Rav. In 78, you know, there's one thing to be the Rav's Talmud in the 50s when I knew nothing. And it's one thing in 78 where I could talk with him for hours and entertain him with the little knowledge I had. So we spoke for a long time about Yom Tov Sheni. This was in Boston, 78, the summer. The Shabbat there, I was at the Pizer home with my wife and children. And Rebbe told me the whole story when he visited Israel in 35, the one and only time. Shavuot fell on Shabbat that year. So he asked his father, what do I do? It was second day Yom Tov, and his father told him, you're a regular Israeli, you're in Israel, the Pizer. Said the Shulchan Aruch is incorrect, you have to follow the Chacham Tzvi, and you daven like the Israelis, plain and simple. But luckily, he couldn't do it with Shabbos, but davening just like the Israelis. So I always Yes, you all know that. Halacha l'maaseh, glad, Mark, if you drink Coca-Cola on Pesach, it's because of this gentleman who just walked in, okay? And Moshe David, happy to see you. Okay, I have your Yichus chart for you. Okay, I guess it's very valuable. You should go on the old Melech George near the old Knesset. There's a publisher, Kilda. You should make 10 copies of this for your descendants. It's your Yichus going back to the Gold Malta, that you can trace your forebears back to the 1700s. There's no one else in this room that can do it. Take my word. So you can go back. So which now you see that kind of news happens. Okay. Coming back here. So I found out that the Peshul was paskening like the Shulchan Aruch. So I said, Heshich, the Rav, I mean, this was something we heard with our own ears in the name of Rav Moshe Reb Chaim. He said, look, I have my own opinion. You see, there's a certain independence there. I can tell you another incident. It goes back many years, the early 1990s. Someone who worked for the OU, I'll mention a name, unfortunately, it's a new generation. Rabbi Leff, do you remember Rabbi Burton Leff? A Yiddish tzaddik. You know, who am I? What am I? He taught that he picked up my shiur and he pushed me into the limelight. So here I am at the Yodu convention upstate New York, and I was sitting, my wife, myself, Heshish, Shana, and second day Yantar, but with Shavuos, he wanted women should not light candles. Now, just think for a minute. Why do we light candles? Candles is keep it the only good Shabbat and have more light in the house. We shouldn't trip over each other on Shabbat. Light to read, to eat, to enjoy. No, second day Yantif, who lights anything? The time clock does it all. We can't do anything. So you're lighting candles. What are you doing? You're creating light. Who are you fooling? More than that, he raised the whole question. You're in a hotel. You're in a hotel. Our resident mashgiach. No, when you go to Ireland with the whole kashrut for the essence of Coca-Cola, you stay. Where do you stay? You stay in a hotel. What do you do for Shabbos candles? In the room. Okay. In Israel, they'll arrest you if you like candles in the room. You understand? You stay with the candles, I gather. But all right, when we were in Russia, we also were, you know. Baruch Hashem. But remember in Russia, we lived in the room and we did the budget. That's all we needed for the KGB agent on the floor to see what we did. So, Rav Heschel raised the issue. They light downstairs, all the women light, they set up the table. What are they lighting? What are they accomplishing? What are they doing? And I can tell you, his wife and some of the other women at the table were upset. He said, I don't see any reason how you light, how you can make a bracha. I took, my own feeling is very different. I think what's happened with women lighting candles, it represents the ultimate completion of all our preparations. So when a woman lights candles, it's like she's saying to the Ribbono Shel Olam, the house is ready, the food is ready, everything is set. This is the icing on the cake. Same thing on Yontif. You're right, the time clock set everything. But who got the house ready? Who prepared the food? This, like the ultimate culmination of the Kabbalah Shabbat, the Kabbalah Yontif. But I saw his individuality. Now, halacha l'maaseh, I don't know. I don't want to repeat what I read at the table from the women. It was very sharp. But halacha l'maaseh, that's Reb Heschel. And that's how you can understand that he can, it's nothing to laugh at. Yesterday they were walking out with smirks on their face. It's nothing you have to understand. This is Reb Heschel. He is unique. And he reaches a conclusion. We'll talk about this after. Believe me, you have a lot to say about the locust after Sukkot. But he can eat locust. He doesn't drink milk. Now, with the drink milk rule, I got another email this morning. And Brian Schwartz. Last night, I met Rabbi Elephant from the OU, and I spoke to him about the lecture about the kashrus of milk. I also mentioned about Rav Shachter. He told me that Rebbetzin Shachter worked in the OU. She was very upset that her husband did not drink milk. Rabbi Elephant went with Rav Shachter to see Rav Elyashiv. He discussed it with Rav Shachter. The conversation ended with Rav Elyashiv telling Rav Shachter he understood his reasoning and he can continue with the skumra not to drink milk. So that's the third take on the story. If you recall, I told you all of Jerusalem was shaking. What I heard originally is that the Elyashiv was very upset with him. That's why I told you the strawberry story, which I heard from my witnesses. The other take on it was that the Elyashiv, the children who were censoring, who could go in, the Elyashiv's sons, and the Yomo may know one of them, so they told Rav Shachter, don't bring this up, our father will be very upset. This is now a third take that did the Yavid Yane Amen. So you can take whatever point of view you wish. Okay, one more comment, it's still Sunday. One more comment on yesterday. I got a wonderful question from Yossi, who's trying to defeat the Satan and the elements against him. What I would suggest is you wake up like I do at 4 o'clock. And start studying the Daf Yomi then. You'll see, you'll be able to manage everything that's I hope. If I can do it, why can't you do it? Okay, anyway, here's the next one question that the Ishala, we were talking about why you in my time. I can't talk about why you today because I honestly don't know what's going on in Washington. On one hand, I see the Beit Medrash pictures. If I walk in without a black hat, I may be out of place. On the other hand, I see kids without kippah walking around on campus. All right, I have so much to say on this topic, and I have the right to talk about it because the founder of What's YU is my cousin, Rabbi Reffel. So I have a lot to say, but it's not for now. Maybe one day, take off 10 years, 14 years, 49 years and talk about it. All right. But the question of synthesis came up yesterday. And I can still see Rabbi Belkin being attacked from the audience. Why don't we have synthesis here? And they spelled it out. You go into an English literature class. Why the heck do we have to have teachers who curse and teach us Beowulf and Canterbury Tales and go crazy with sexual innuendos? Why can't we have synthesis? Take good literature, War and Peace, and compare it to Jewish philosophy. This would be fascinating. I don't have to tell you, Mark, Baron Lichtenstein, he was the first year he came in Aliyah, invited him to speak at the Torah Shabbat Tech Conference, most of that book. And he quoted English literature in the middle of comparing. They never invited him again, okay? A fact. He used to laugh when he would remind Aaron, remember what happened? Aaron could have done a job. Wow. So you see, why you, the Rav, and I can prove it many times over, but Dr. Belkin and the Rav, I use the word coexistence, not synthesis. Coexistence, and we spoke about this halachically yesterday, the article that my nephew sent me, the rub with fermentation. Interesting concepts. So, yes, he is. Ish halacha. So you see, ish halacha, you're absolutely right. There's this tremendous thrust to conquer the world in which we live. Lotar to keep shuha. Every medical advancement, imagine you're a scientist. You come up with something, Charlie's gonna win. We have two scientists sitting in front of me. You're gonna win the Nobel Prize. That's a tremendous advancement. It's a fulfillment of the rule of Rebbetzin Yeshua. In Israel, it's more than that. In Israel, it's also mitzvah tishuv ha'aretz. But it doesn't necessarily mean synthesis. It could very well be, Max, coexistence. You follow?
Follow,
yes. All right, you get there. You'll make it up. Jesse, let me just tell you, are you familiar with Rav Shisha Paul Hirsch? Have you gone through the 19 letters? If you haven't gone through the 19 letters, you don't know the heart of Rav Hirsch. Although the Pesach and Chumash also, but the 19 letters, he has paragraphs there. Who put us into the ghetto? We didn't choose to be in the ghetto. We shouldn't be in the ghetto. See, Rav Hirsch, it was a total synthesis. I went to the Frankfurt Reali High School 150 years ago with Norman Schlesser's cousins, okay? You know what the curriculum was like? You know where my wife graduated high school? Ramaz. You've heard of Ramaz? Okay, Baruch Hashem. Tell me, the Ramaz curriculum, I went to MTA. Was there any correspondence between those two curriculums? Ramaz, total integration, 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock mathematics, 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock Talmud, 11 o'clock to 12 o'clock German literature. You follow what I'm saying? MTA, you didn't look at an English book till after 1 o'clock. Well, it was 1:30, we could have 1:04. I later taught MTA, but I can't remember the hours. I remember the students, but not the configuration of the hours. And you see, there's a second volume. There's a book that a friend of mine put out, The Rav, The World of Rabbi Joseph Bissa. Are you familiar with those two volumes? They're quite important because it's the only honest collection. Every word is from the Rav. The only thing in that volume is that the author wrote is the biography, and a mini biography. You'll ask Norm Schless after class. And look into volume 2, and you'll see I have two tremendous contributions where I translated the Rav from Yiddish to English, where he discusses the difference between him and Rav Hirsch. And this is why I said to you, I am not certain when push comes to shove that the Rav would view Miluot synthesis, what goes with it? I don't know. In Yemot HaMashiach, it could be if the Gentiles will do it for you, fine, you're not obligated. Rav Hirsch would hold, you're absolutely obligated. There's a real difference between their two viewpoints. Rav Hirsch was totally integrated. The Rav was how did I define him? A Briska who chose to live in the Western world. Now, if I can make it even sharper, if I think about this last night, I'm getting these questions from all over the world about Rabbi Meiselman, Rabbi Shurkin. A lot of people have their children going to Torah Moshe. And Torah Moshe is the only school that why you cancel their relationship with. We have here the Abraham program, and every school we give credit, we can join together. It's part of the greater YU framework. And Torah Moshe, they canceled the relationship many years ago because there was anti-YU comments at Torah Moshe. But it's interesting. I know both Rabbi Shurkin and Rabbi Meiselman, and they're fine, wonderful individuals. Now, they represent the real Rav. One is a nephew, one is a cousin. And parents call me, parents write to me. Is this the Rav? So you see, if Rabbi Shurkin and Rabbi Meiselman walked into Frankfurt am Main to the Beit Sefer Reali, knocked on the door of Hirsch, he would rebuke them. He would reprimand them. You do not represent the total picture of Torah. What's missing is the derech eretz, the integration, the synthesis. 100%. The Rav, tell me, did the Rav ever rebuke them? What do you think, Wally? Absolutely not. I can tell you with my own ears, I was standing next to the rabbi. He was talking with a very prominent rabbi. None of these people were alive then, including the person they were talking to. This person I later had a lot of correspondence with because he became an Avbeitin in America, and he handled Gittin, and I came up with certain documents that were of tremendous help to him in solving some Mamzei Yud problems. So we were in touch quite often. A certain document that I published in Rakhafan Aaron, I think Chelik Gimel, I published it. I made that available to him decades ago. And the Rav meets his father at the RCA convention in 1977, and he says to his father, "Your son is an emistic random. Afraid of fagonigin, let me with them in learning. It's a pleasure to sport with him in learning." And this kid, the Lakewood boy, I don't think he ever went to college. Today you have Lakewood kids after class, the Lakewood. They go to college, they go to medical school. Am I right or wrong? But you have. Don't say all, but you have. And then Rav Hirsch would say, "A pleasure to speak and learning with your son, but he lacks a college degree. He lacks a doctorate. He's missing the derivative." That's the way Rapish would talk. Charlie, am I telling you as it is, as a blood Yeki, or you were raised in America and they corrupted you? Jacques Zimmerman is coming to Israel after Sukkot and we get to see each other. Okay, let us return to Monday. It's now Monday, September 11th, and let us go further. I just got interesting information. You never get enough information, and I hope the person in Sydney, Rabbi Dr. Slavin, is listening, David Slavin, because he doesn't have this in his doctorate. I hope it's correct. It's very fascinating. YU, Yeshiva College, as we know it today, the campus, and Yeshiva Chachmei Yiblin, and everything we've been talking about, they were both built at the same time. The campus uptown, Yeshiva moved there, Hanukkah 1929. A few months later, Chachmei Lublin began. Chachmei Lublin, nothing remains. Lower Leno Hitler did his job, and Yeshiva University alive and kicking. Now, and as we've spoken about, and I can't repeat everything, we began already half a year ago. Reb Meir Shapiro was one of a kind, very innovative. The analogy I made to Rabbi Steve Riskin in the 60s, 70s, into the 80s, it's a very good analogy. Again, I have to say, over the decades, you became more left, and I find that certain issues I differ with him quite strongly. But nevertheless, you have to give credit to a man who was, we called him the Boy Wonder, Stevie Wonder. There was a song and a singer. He was, I think he was blind, if I'm not mistaken. And Steve Riskin, Shlomo Riskin, I saw elder rabbis sitting before him and shaking and taking in every word that he said. He was a dynamo and revolutionary in ideas. And he wanted to build, he started his YU, was shaking. He's going to build a high school. And he built a high school for boys and a high school for girls. And he wanted to go further with a Beis Medrash program and a Smicha program. And he got the Rav at one of his affairs where Max Stern gave him some heavy money. He got the Rav to speak an unbelievable talk that my wife and I had a big split. We spent endless at the tape was totally twisted. Now I can reveal the truth after Shapiro's funeral and all the secrets came out. So I'm the start of it. I have a right to talk now. It's 44 years I kept it under my tongue. So my always we worked on strengthening that real app, and I broke it down to sets of why I talked the Rav. I quoted a number of times in my work on the Rav, which I just cited before. And this was Rav Meir Shapiro, like Steve Riskin, right? Whatever Rabbi Riskin did in America, outside of the shul, nothing remained. Remember, I explained to you, when he came to Israel, in America, he had one right-hand rabbi, Pinchas Bach, Pinny Bach, and the son of Rabbi Benjamin Bach, who was a Talmud of the Rav and the Kailo in Boston. This is historic material, Baltimore. And when Pinny died suddenly in his early 30s, big tragedy, dancing with the Talmidim, could never replace him. Israel, I had to say it that slow, there is so much competence and so much capability today that what Rabbi Riskin began is all over the state of Israel basically today in many, many different forms and configurations. Now, this was Rabbi Meir Shapiro. Trying to find a replacement for him was well nigh impossible. And they looked for this one, we looked for that one. We finished off last week's class that they finally, in 1935, they finally were able to settle upon Rabbi Yalev Frima, and afterwards Rav Landau. We'll talk about them later today in more detail. Very fascinating individuals. Remember, we ended off the class. Rabbi Landau was unique, an Einikel, the grandson of the Noder Yehuda, and he had only one child, the daughter. And he would go for walks for his health, have to talk and learning with someone, and his daughter was a Lamdanet with Heket. She would be today a Yochasset Halacha, and it was here you are, Hasidic Yeshiva, Hasidic Yeshiva, and the Rosh Yeshiva's daughter is like Hannah Henkin. All right. What I got to hear going for the information I got this morning, and I thank my dear Talmud Rabbi Reuven Unger for Shalavim. So he sent me a Xerox, a photograph from a volume. I have the volume at home. It's about Rav Shach, Shimusha Shel Torah. So here it says, I don't have the pages, I can't give you the exact page, but I do have the photograph. It's a footnote. And Rav Shach was speaking and praising Rav Meir Shapiro, the Daf Yomi, what Rav Meir Shapiro, the schut he has all over the world, people are learning. And they end on a footnote that after Rav Meir Shapiro died, Rav Chaim Oiza asked Rav Shach to succeed him as Rosh Yeshiva in Lublin. And according to the footnote, Rav Shach was a guest of the yeshiva, gave one shir, and it ends off at that. If you knew Rav Shach and knew where he was coming from, and you knew Lublin, you can understand there was not a glove on a hand, to put it mildly, but very, very fascinating. Now, there's someone else that I want to mention when you talk about, and Mark, what I'm quoting from, a doctor was done in Sydney, Australia. I had a little bit of an influence. I encouraged him, and it's very Makitova. I had the whole doctorate in my office. If he sent me that, it's never been published, but it shows you the Hakara Patov. So he did a doctorate, David Slavin, on Lublin, Sydney University. And his grandfather, we spoke about him last term, was a Mashkir there. So David means there was a reason for him to be interested. He makes another point, and this is very dear to our hearts if we're living in Israel. Who else supported the yeshiva very strongly? And here we come to the Lau family. You all know that this young kid, Yisrael Meir Lau, Rabbi Heschel Shach, with the elder, you have to differentiate between the two chakras, but they spell it differently. But the people make a mistake. I happen to know both of them very closely, very intimately. Rabbi Heschel Schachter was my wife's rabbi from the Bronx. So the schuyot that man had is J.J. Schachter's Rabbi Dr. Jacob Joseph Schachter's father. The schuyot that he has, you have no idea. you know, kids were left. There was one woman, he pushed her onto a transport for Switzerland. She didn't want to live, didn't want to go further. And the later I taught many of her children and descendants, it's yeah, they're unbelievable. So he discovered this little kid, Yisrael Meir.
Yeah.
Yisrael Meir Lau's father was Rabbi Moshe Chaim Lau. He has a son named Moshe Chaim. I think he's the Rebbe of Netanya, if I'm not mistaken. He's not the chief rabbi. The chief rabbi is Rabbi David Lau. I also have a very deep connection with David Lau, but that's because my grandson married the daughter of his right hand, the Balabas that helped him build Modi'in. So you know, that's the word, Chavre Itlan. So you should know that the Piyut Kafred, Rabbi Moshe Chaim Lau, was the biggest supporter of the yeshiva. Wherever he traveled, he would make appeals for Yachal. And what we spoke about a few weeks ago, the Kofen Nefesh idea, he raised what today would be millions of dollars, Kofen Nefesh. That appealed to the masses. It's an idea that caught on. Is there any source for it? Kofen Nefesh, Vic, if your cow killed someone, killed a person, you have to pay Kofen Nefesh. What do you have to do? You should have made a dream. But it's put on. You'll see here all the time, if an Adam Gadol dies, his death is a kapara for us. So we're obligated to give Kofen Nefesh. But there's another point here. And this point is right in this classroom. There's one person sitting here who is not a YU prophet, but he's come into the greatness of the greater YU world. I'll put it that way. I always tell people that Gruss is the best of the best, that we've had people working here who come from the total Haredi world, and they're amazed what they see here. Lamdanim, Sadiqim, all right, we don't wear a uniform, but the Baruch Hashem. And I tell them, what you're looking at is the best of the best. It's a shifra de shifra. So people want to be rabbis. You want to be rabbis. I had the privilege. I studied with the three greatest rabbis in New York, the big three. Now you read the Rav Volume 2, where the Rav talks with Rabbi Beryl Rosenzweig, and what he tells him about it is cool. Who he looked up to and was son to look up to. The Rav had a terrific sense of humor. But the Rav said, when you were growing up, who did you look up to? The big three. Rabbis Young, Lichtenstein, Goldstein. And I had the privilege in college, I studied Jewish ethics with Rabbi Young. It was one of a kind. Ach, Moros. Ach, was he a fabulous teacher. And a German gentleman, first order. His English, his accent. You loved him. You know who is his biggest chassid, the Charlie? Herman Wook. Read the memoir literate. Herman Wook goes his whole Yiddish time, not to his grandfather. Grandfather was a Yiddish, a Yiddish, a Rav. But Rabbi Yanni, his Torah Derech Eretz. No, I studied Rabbi Lichtenstein, Rabbi Goldstein. I remember giving a drush. I still remember the drush. I could see Rabbi Goldstein's eyes lighting up. The morning God told the big day, the Pamarim. I gave a whole drush. We have to make noise. We have to let the world. Well, I spoke about a week ago when I made a Shechayar yesterday, Baruch Sheki Vanti. We're not part of the consensus. Yiddishkeit, Torah, the donkey with the wagon, fill it with Torah, Torah observance, Shabbat. You're going to go into the rabbinate? Oh, did I have good role models? Rabbi Lichtenstein, Herr Mapik Magol. I told you this story time and again. Rabbi Kahani became a Rosh Hashiva in YU. Rabbi Lamb met him. His English was unbelievable. Lamb figured this is a real Torah Derech Eretz personality. It turned out that Rabbi Kahani more to the right than the average YU person, but okay. But Rabbi Lamb brought him in, and everyone's talking, the new Rosh Yeshiva, And they invite him to Kehila Cheshwin, KJ, to give a class on Thursday evening. And he goes, and almost no one shows up. So he meets, I heard this from Rabbi Kahn himself. He meets Rabbi Lichtenstein, and little Joe, as we used to call him, says to him, "What was the title of your lecture?" Risk. And Rabbi Lichtenstein says, "Who do you think you're going to attract with those philosophic titles?" And Moshe, Rabbi Lichtenstein says, he says to Rabbi Lichtenstein, "New Rabbi Lichtenstein, what should I have titled it?" And Rabbi, and he describes it like writing in the air. Rabbi goes, "There is more to brisk than tea. Brisk Lichtenstein. There is more to brisk than tea." Chaim, you got it? So there's a fellow here. I see he's interested in what's going on here. He comes to my classes. I believe he goes to Rabbi Bednash, another Gadol, Milo. We have great people here outside of himself. So I hear him. He wants, there's going to be a class after Sukkot in public speaking. And as a rabbi speaking public. And he's smart enough to know he'd like to go to that class. Rick, if you were in Yachal, who do you think they would send you to for lessons in public speaking? Rabbi Moshe Chaim Lau. So you see, the Lau family, it's not just Mark, your family that ties into Yeshiva Chachmei Lublin, but right here in Israel, the Lau family, the last rabbi of Birkhoff, he was one of the greatest supporters of Yeshiva Chachmei Lublin. And now we come towards the end, and I apologize to Jack, it's depressing, but I have to tell you, I have a different outlook. I recommend the book to you, 10 Green Bottles. A lady who works here lent it to me. And the Tisha B'av I suffer, if I had the guts to be like the Radachev, I'd open up at the Gemara and open up and write and learn and do. It's Pikuach Nefesh for me, plain and simple, but who can't be like the Radachev? So I read this book on Tisha B'av. It was the greatest. The true story of one family's journey from war-torn Austria to the ghettos of Shanghai. It's written by the daughter of a survivor, magnificent English, Vivian Jeanette Kaplan, I believe from Toronto. What's missing in the book, I'd like to know afterwards. Just add a postscript. What happened to the Kaplan family in Toronto? Jack, maybe you can check it out. Now, you know why this book was so, Tisha B'Av, so perfect? It's about an Australian, a family in Vienna. They were so at home. They were so cultured. They were so happy. They were so distant from Torah Hashem Tamima. And look what Hitler did to them. And I don't know, I suffer, but I'm the happiest person alive that I had enough sense to listen to my wife and come in on the yard when I was yet a youngster. You know, people come very, any age you come is good. But I remember my wife, I was a Rosh Yeshiva in YU, built a Kehila from Japan, first off in that shul, suburban Essex County. They eulogized me when I left America. I can't go into details now. Important people eulogized me. Gedolei Yisrael, what are you crazy? And when you read this volume, boy, it turns you into such a Zionist. Ashrenu shezachinu to come home. And we have a big challenge to build a Jewish state. And as I said yesterday, we have to make a Shechiyonu. Who would have ever dreamt we would achieve this? Haaretz is very upset with the new year, September 1st. For the first time in the history of Israel, there's absolute parity. It's first year kids, first grade, 50% wear kippah. Put together, חינוך עצמאי ובחינוך ממלכתי דתי, it is 50% of the first year students. So when I came in Aliyah, maybe 20% were people. 10 years time, wow, when my great-grandchildren, my brother's great-grandchildren, right now filling the ranks. So we have to be realistic, and we talk about it, and we have to learn from it. We have to hope that people in Teaneck and the Five Towns and Beverly Hills are listening. And I can tell you, I just spoke with a student, a BMT student from 50 plus years ago, who calls me every Erev Pesach and Erev Rosh Hashanah. And Yehuda was telling me how his Kehila in Midbar Yehuda, endless Anglos, endless Aliyah, and top quality today, and young people in the heart of life, Baruch Hashem. Maybe we should be upset with Biden and Trump. On the other hand, it's good for Aliyah, and anything that's good for Aliyah, Rakefet signs on. Now, this comes back to something I spoke about 2 weeks ago, and I've lived with this from eighth grade on. I was a bright little kid, halavai, if Chazal used the word, be made for me, if you're aware of that expression. Chupi means when I was young. And when I was young, Arifut, Chupi, your mind is sharp, your mind is clear. Okay, and it's true. I was just learning a sugya in Sanhedrin. I told my wife, this is the sugya I got married on. And I never was able to make up the shir, the rav. As much as I took other people's notes, it's not the same as hearing the rav. Your mind absorbed it. Okay. Sharp, you're good. So I told you, I asked Rav Henoch Fishman, my eighth grade Rebbe, Shanghai survivor, what did you think about in 1940? And I got the answer from him. I got the same answer from Zarek Ahavtuk's memoir, Sarid Palitvi Mechashoa. There's an English translation, but I read the original in Hebrew. I got the same answer from Moshe Aaron, the famous German professor who I taught with in Mitzvah, he taught at Bar Ilan, who wrote a memoir that his nephew, who dabbles with me and is a shtickler chassid of mine, he gave me the volume, same answer. And you can, everyone had the same attitude. We Jews have suffered. We went through the Khmelnytsky massacres. We went through the Crusades. We went through the Hitler. 100,000 Jews will be killed. Okay, but we'll survive. No one ever dreamt that it would be a total destruction, man, woman, and child, gas chambers, crematoriums, and all that. It's not possible. And you see this time and time and again in Mamma with the child. Some people saw, let's get out, the writing and that. Not that they dreamt it would be this terrible. But all right, let's get out. I have very good friends, you may know them, Barry and Sue Lieberman. So Sue always talks about her mother. Her father was a happy guy. I don't know, Czechoslovakia, a businessman. What is he lacking? Her mother said, no, it's no good. It's too anti-Semitic. And the family got out to New Zealand right before the last chance. They get out to New Zealand. It's Rabbi Adam Mintz's in-laws, who want to identify, or Sharon Mintz, who with the Bible, the famous Bible that was just sold. She's the great expert, student, great expert in manuscripts. It's her parents. And you hear this time and again. So, yes, what they thought of was, let's get out of the yeshiva building. Let's move to the hills. Let's get away from the war zone. And they moved out in hopes they could continue. The Polish government took over the building, confiscated it, converted it into a hospital. Benjamin Gielfish, he was the last student to leave the building. And he handed the key to the Polish government. Now, he survived. We're going to come to how a number of Lublina survived, wound up in Brooklyn and elsewhere. It's not now. We'll come to it after Sukkot. And I have a major article coming out. But right now, it's at press in Hakira, where you'll see all the sources, but I'll cite some of the books. Okay, now, soon the Polish government had to leave the building, the Nazis took it over, their slave labor offices were managed from the building, and there's a very famous picture when the Nazis come into Lublin. You've seen the picture, and you can see it at the Yad Vashem, how they're cutting off the beard, the penis, of a young Jewish teenager. That person, Yisrael Tzvi Latkovsky, was a student in Yeshiva Chachma Lublin. Now, he's the name. I believe that that student survived. I'm positive. I read that picture, and they did research, and they found him in Bnei Brak. Years ago, decades ago, I'm talking about. And the legend is the famous picture in Yad Vashem, where they're laughing and cutting off the payas, and he survived. Here we come to an interesting point for anyone who lives in risk in the Western world. Here I underline the Western world. You'll see why in a second. After World War II, Jews returned to the building. The building was an attraction. They attempted to restart the yeshiva. Didn't get very far. Later in the DP camps, there was Yeshiva Chachmei Lublin. Some survivors used the name. But the building, the Jews returned, and there was a rabbinate. The building was the center, Jewish functions, and the non-religious Jews, many of them could have been Mesorati, Shabbos, Shabbos, but the building took up the Yiddish theater. Now, when I talk about the Yiddish theater, you don't realize today what a big role that played among the Jews. Today, we don't need a Yiddish theater. We have Hollywood. Baruch Hashem. You have a Netflix. I mean, it's endless. All right, you have to choose what you want to watch. In Israel, we do have a Jewish theater, but it's all in Hebrew. And just now, a film, Sheva Bracha, won a lot of awards. They win an Oscar, and it's based on Torah themes, Torah life, Sheva Bracha. There are others to fill the void. I mean, if you saw that movie, these were top quality. But I know growing up, what the Yiddish theater meant to my grandparents. My grandparents, my grandfather, my grandmother, to whom I'm related to Rabbi Revel, Calvaristi, cousins, we were all cousins. I could be a whole list. I did my research after the book came out on Kavna, and I can tell you in my family, there are Jews that raise people who have one crazy goal in life to teach as much Torah as possible. If I walk 5 minutes from here to Chevron Yeshiva, Rav David Cohen is my cousin. If I go down south to Nitzarim, the Rosh Yeshiva, the great Mechanech, is my nephew, Rav Hillel David Rothkopf. We go back two generations, Rav Dov Revel. Calvaristi. It's unbelievable what comes out of one family. And in the Yeshiva Chachmei Lublin, the Yiddish theater got started. Imagine people who survived the war. Well, why do we go to movies? By the way, I can tell you in parentheses, don't record it, but the Ruvs loved Westerns. I know this from the family. And they wouldn't interrupt them unless it was life or death. He would get caught up in the Western, it's an escape. You feel better, you relax. Prime time in a world where there's no tension, women cooked on what goes on the screen. Fine. One of the stars in the theater was Ida Kamininska, Kamininska. She later reaches America and is a very famous star. My grandparents said that, as I said, my grandfather learned the Russian and my grandmother are related to Rebel. And I think the greatest moment of their Jewish identity in America was the Yiddish theater. No, what am I talking about? Who grew up in America? Who watched movies? Dan Kane. If you don't recognize the name, make believe you do so. The ignorant will pass for the wise. Dan Kane was a first cousin once removed to Ida Kamininska. And Danny Kaye, what an actor, what ability, how quickly he could speak. What a character. And I met him, I saw him, I should say, once in my life. A couple came in from America. If I start telling you how I know this couple, it'll be here to Rosh Hashanah. From the rabbinate, from my research, great-grandchildren of the Ritbaz came to thank me for my postdoctoral research on the Ritbaz. I knew I was going in Aliyah, and I did something that no rabbi should do. If you read today's post, teaching you how to be a rabbi in today's post, I said, you're a great-granddaughter of the Ritbaz? In a reconstructionist temple? Children that don't know another from a bet? Told this woman off, and she started to cry like a baby. So the sukkah of my shul in Maplewood, 1968. We became best friends. There is some Yiddishkeit left in the family due to yours truly and Kabbalah, but very little. And they came to visit Israel, and they took us out to King David. King David, Yiddish. And, you know, then I was young and I could eat meat. And we're in a restaurant. And in the corner, sitting with his back to everyone, Danny Kaye. And yes, why was he sitting that way? So people shouldn't bother him for his autograph. And my wife, years later, she said, oh boy, you don't know what my life, let me not diverge too much, but sitting in the Queens, people took us out, and in the next room, there's a Shevabra. I won't mention names, very prominent people. What? Rabbi Kiffin is here? She was a student. They took me away from my wife, away from my host and hostess. At the Shevabrach is speaking and whatnot. From that time on, whenever I went out with people, my wife put a mask on my face. No one should recognize my crooked nose. But you see, they tried after World War II to do something. It's the beautiful building. It survives the Nazis. The Nazis jubilized the building. It couldn't succeed. Well, under the communists, there was taken over a so-called, I'm quoting from the doctorate, abandoned possession. Abandoned possession is a term they used. Jews aren't left in Lublin. The communists took it over. First, there was a university there. Then there was a medical school, a communist medical school. Well, under the communists, and this too you have to understand, maybe Yomo understands me. The communist empire, when we were growing up, we were shaking in our pants. They sent up Sputnik, I think I was in 57, around then, mid-50s, and the head of America, And Rabbi Lerner Renata from Newmark, can you quote it? Real quick, yeah. Familiar with that article? That was Maurice Lerner wrote the article. I mean, I had a Rabbi Lerner, I was a drunk. Maurice loved it, not Roman. God, they were two brothers, a unique family. Terrific, terrific, quite a family. So he wrote an article, Red or Dead. What, do you remember the article? We were growing up, you had to make a choice. Is it better to be a communist, or should you fight and drop dead on the battlefield? And we were so frightened that, yeah, so you can't understand that today. Jacob said, well, not your family. What the heck is Russia compared to mighty America? Now, the truth was that it was all a farce. Russia was totally impoverished, but they spent money on certain areas. And if you would know, when we worked for the Mossad in Russia, 90% of Russia was off limits to tourists. You follow? No, they didn't want you to see the planet. What brought Russia down, no, do you know or not? Videos, when they invented video. So occasionally a video was smuggled in. The Russians, the Jews explained to us, the Russian Jews, the refusniks, they explained, you watched the video, we didn't care about the plot. You saw the houses, the cars, the standard of living. They couldn't lie to them. It's amazing when you look back and see what happened. And here is a description of what happened to Yeshiva Chachmei Lublin under the communists. This is a visitor to Lublin. The interior of the former yeshiva is shabby and crumbling. It is hard to believe that these never renovated classrooms with their wooden bench carved with the initials of yeshiva students from half a century ago are still being used by medical students. One look at this medical school is enough to convince anyone of the poverty in Poland. When I visited Lublin in 1998, the medical school looked and smelled worse than the inside of the brick barracks at the Auschwitz main concentration camp. And this is memoir literature. You have the source here. It's unbelievable what happened. Then the miracle happened. Communism fell. One of the reasons is the reason I just gave you. Chernobyl is another reason. The atomic accident there, which ultimately killed so many and ruined lives, so much cancer came out of it. Again, I have to mention Chabad with great Derech Eretz. They went to work and they brought many of the children out. And that's why I mentioned to you Maxwell, a very interesting individual. I don't know if a real biography has ever been written about him. A survivor who became a billionaire, found his Jewish roots again. And no one would fly these kids out. They would have to land in Europe, in a country, Britain, let's say, from there go on to Israel. And Chabad contacted Maxwell, and he used his influence, got a little British airport where the kids came in and were transferred to another plane and brought to Israel. And I can tell you that living in Israel today, I can just give an example. Rabbi Kogan, Yitzhak Kogan of Leningrad originally, today in Moscow, Tzadik Yisod Olam, he adopted one of these kids. This kid today lives in the Golan, many children, grandchildren. And that's why I mentioned the Maxwell lady who was thrown into jail for many, many years. The trial, Epstein, Lower Lane, I don't have to go into details. I said, I hope Chabad looks her up. Technically, she's not Jewish because his wife was not Jewish. The kids, Maxwell's children, they are halakhically not Jewish. but it would be a big chesed to help them. A father did a lot to save these children. This Jewish heart woke up. You got to give kapat. Rebbe. With the fall of communism, the communists, or the ex-communists, they've all wised up. The Jews are a tremendous source of money. They'll do anything to come back and govern where their forebears stopped. And of course, this is a civic viewpoint as a Litvak. I can't agree. All I can tell you is the Vilna Gaon. If you read the writings on the Vilna Gaon and studies, and I refer to Wertheim's classic doctorate of dropsy on Hasidim and Mitnagdim, the Vilna Gaon never visited graves. If you read Ish Halakha, you have the whole chapter in there where the Rav describes why his family doesn't visit graves. They want the living, not the dead. And Harav Chaim, the only time a Chaim would calm down, according to Ish Halakha now, is when he would learn that even in death there's halakha, the Nagayim, etc., etc., Tumah V'Tara. So then he felt comforted. And the Rav, you should know, the Rav never visited graves. When his wife died, he would go to her grave every Friday. There's now a memoir published by the OU, Jewish Action, the family that drove him every Friday to visit his wife's grave. And this has to do with, it's life is life, marriage is marriage. We're not always zeicher, whatever it means sometimes. You know, zacha, eza, lo zacha, kinegdo, you all know chazal. And anyone who studied marriage counseling, it's a big field today. Life can be difficult. You marry and you have to readjust to each other. Sometimes you never readjust, it ends in divorce. Sometimes God thinks differently. You lose the wife of your youth. I've said many times that the modern world, the so-called retrogressives, I don't want to use the word progressives, the retrogressives, they've taken away the whole concept of Eshet Me'urim. Eshet Me'urim is, you look at the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Kaf Bet, there's nothing like it. Eshet Me'urim, one of the most beautiful concepts of life, of the world, of God, of Torah, of husband and wife. Not of the earth. Some people who say that. The Gedolei Yisrael that can never function again with their wives go. They're never the same again. Rav Ovadia is an example. The Lubavitcher Rebbe is an example. And anyone who knew the Rav, that's a perfect example. So when he started going, I know this because I know the people who drove him in Boston, and I know who drove him in New York. And when he started going to his wife's grave, his conscience bothered him. Hey, why did his conscience bother him? He has parents. Then if you live of the aim, even after they're dead, and you don't go to their grave. So I can tell you, Rabbi Finkelstein drove the Rav the first time on the way to the airport back to Boston. The Rav asked him to leave early and stop at the cemetery, the Briscus section. It's a cemetery right between Queens and Manhattan, Queens and Brooklyn, right on the border. I've lived my journey there many times, and there's the Rav's mother and the Rav's father, and he told me the Rav was hysterical at the cemetery. So, George asked the Rav, Rebbe, your family doesn't go to graves, he said, no, I go to my wife. I can't help myself. So I had to go to my parents. But Hasidic Jews, the money they spend right now, look what's going on with Breslau, with Uman. And then, and I wanted that. So, Mark, here's where I wanted to mention you. Oh, I knew I had to mention you today. The prime minister, if he had Seichel, hire, grab some of my best Talmidim of coming on the air. Rabbi Mark Gratch, Rabbi Steve Przanski, Prime Minister Netanyahu, Bibi, we love you. Don't open your mouth without consulting a seasoned American rabbi. What am I talking about? You've heard the news that I've seen the newspapers. You've looked at Arutz 7. They're going crazy. The Breslovan idiots. They want to storm Uma. All Russia has to do is one rocket on Uma. They just, where Yomo comes from, they just bombed Kiev yesterday again. Bani Shalalu, God will protect us. So the Prime Minister stepped off and God protect them. God didn't protect us. Now all the Prime Minister has to stay here say, Mark, how should I stay? You say, BB, state of his fathers. But Mokum Sakana sudden we cut leg. So hearing it. But these guys, I can't believe the morons we're dealing with, politicians, how they do. I'm an Russian. Jump off a roof. God is going to save you. We've all learned lessons. I jump in front of a car and then I say, God killed me. Makam Sakana. Satan Makatre. Ushamatam the Nafshakachayim. Plain and simple. We take vaccines. We take care of our health. Makam Sakana. This is where we need. Please tell the Prime Minister, you have big titles, I'm a nobody. Tell him, Mr. Prime Minister, there's so many fine, seasoned Anglo rabbis here today. I don't want to be your advisor. I am no truth. Chief Rabbi Avram Shapiro offered me a very wonderful position with a good salary. I would have had money for the fourth Shabbat of the month. He wanted me to be his advisor to the his liaison to the Anglo rabbi, and I couldn't leave the classroom. But I appreciated the offer. He also said to me, "Rabbi, he had a good sense of you." He said, "Lama lo zakan, you don't have a beard." So before I can answer, there's no any day ha'isha mitnagedet. So I told them, Zachelik may ask you to work a little bit more than that. But the truth is, Martha's grandfather had a big beard. And whenever he would kiss her, she would feel the straggly beard. So she never liked the beard as a result. But all right. So what happened when the Polish government took over, and this is going on all over today in Ukraine, in what was Romania, what was Czechoslovakia, they refurbished, it became a tourist attraction. And you now have the Yeshiva Hartman Lublin. There have been three steel hashas that have been celebrated in the Yeshiva. The building was returned to the Jewish community. People have been there among them, I told them. It's a bit of a hotel, it's a kosher facility. It's a tremendous tourist attraction. So the building lives on, and it's far from what it was meant to be. I don't believe it can ever be resuscitated again as Yeshiva Chachmei Lublin. But the building lives on, and Hasidic Jews go there and daven, and they're inspired, and they breathe the air of what once was. All right, as a Litvak, maybe I can understand it to a certain degree. I know I was criticized when I was in Vilna in our final trip to communist Russia, so I went to the kever of Reb Chaim Weiser and the Vilna Gaon. So I told him and said, Rebbe, how come you're going like a chassid on foreign? So I gave a simple answer. I said, you got to know what I'm talking about. Irwin Shapiro gave a good donation to Shvut Ami that I should go and daven for him at the Vilna Gaon's grave. So once I was at the Vilna Gaon's grave, Reb Chaim Weiser is a minute away. They were reburied. The whole story. There was a big cemetery, what we have gone through, a big cemetery in a suburb of Vilna. The name of the suburb, Schnippischmuck. You've heard that name. People, I remember as a kid, Schnippischmuck. Schnippisch, I never knew whether it was real or not. It's a funny name. It was a big suburb. In Schnippischmuck was a tremendous cemetery that was there for hundreds and hundreds of years. I had a time with Joseph Klausner. He died young. He's a grown-up of Bracha. I cry when I mention his name. He never married with no children. Joseph Sweet Klausner. The clowns. My Talmud many times over. BMT, the Kollel, Post Kollel. Talmud Chacham, character par excellence. And the Klaus' uncle wrote an entire volume published in the 30s. Israel Klausner, an entire volume on the Schnippischmuck Cemetery. And he describes row by row where the Lunagon was buried and this one was buried. Lower Lane, the communists took it over, plowed it over. It was a big soccer stadium in a suburb of Vilna, and they allowed the Jews to rebury a few bodies. Among those reburied in the new Jewish cemetery was the Vilna Gaon and the Chaim Weizer with their immediate families, and they're reburied in the new Jewish cemetery. Grave that is lost forever is Rav Avraham, the famous scare of Avraham, Avraham converted at the time of the Gaon. Now, with the end of the yeshiva and everything reaching a self pasuk of Hitler, and again, Rabbi Slavin stresses that it wasn't mismanagement. In other words, Yeshiva Chachma Lublin had a lot of problems when the Maron Shapiro was alive, because he was one man running an entire institution. He was the Rebbe, he was the Rosh Yeshiva, he was the Magid Shir, he was the fundraiser. After his death, it was divided up. Remember, we spoke about his nephew took over the administration. Fundraising improved, Kofa Nefesh, Rabbi Lau, others. There was an administrator, Balabas, very wealthy, stopped his business and devoted himself to the yeshiva. You had Rabbi Thurman, you had Rabbi Landau, Rashi Yeshiva. And the last 5 years, 4 years, the yeshiva functioned on a much better, higher level. And this is part of history. There are ups and downs. I can tell you with Yeshiva University, Rabbi Revel was a magician as far as vision and fundraising, and then the Depression came. And he had pledges written on paper over $2 million. We're talking about 1928-29 money. Couldn't collect a cent. It wasn't worth the paper it was written on. And this is life. Rabbi Belkin, everything is going great. Suddenly, had a recession in the late 60s. He never crawled out of it, not during his lifetime. It was Rabbi Lamb, and you got to give credit to Sokol, his classmate. Said, one of the Brach, what was his first name? Shelton Sokol, SS, right? Shelton Sokol, he managed the yeshiva with an iron hand. I recall fondly, our last together. He cried and he said, Rabbi, and he said, you made something out of yourself. I remained in nothing. I said, Sheldon, you saved the yeshiva. Look at the smut you have. But that's life. Now, what did survive from the yeshiva were some various Talmidim. And some of these Talmidim who did survive became world famous. I'll mention some of them, and I'll come back to them again when we talk about how they survived. First of all, undoubtedly, the most famous Talmud of the yeshiva was Rav Pinchas Hirschsprung. Rav Pinchas Hirschsprung, by the way, one of his sons-in-law is my dear Talmud, Sal Newman, from the second year of BMT, 53 years ago. quite a wonderful family, the Newman family, and part of the family, a good part, lives here. Rabbi Trichas Hirschsprung, God only Rabbi Shimon, I can tell you, eyewitnesses said to me, they saw with their eyes, they put a pin through the Dapei HaGemara, and he can tell you on each daf where that pin fell. And this is, all right, it doesn't, I've said this more than once, to have a photographic memory doesn't make you a Gadol HaDor, but it certainly helps. You need more than a photographic memory, but it certainly helps. If I only had a memory like I remember that I was trying to with the Yankees when they once were a ball team, not a sandlot club, oh, would I know Shas and Poskim back and forth. It's a shame. Wasted on DiMaggio. But he built Montreal. He came to Montreal, and very interestingly, an American, a Canadian woman born and bred in Canada, she married him, wanted only to marry a survivor. And you don't understand the importance of this, because a greenhorn, who wants to marry a greenhorn? But this lady, Nafshak Shirabatera, she loved Torah. And the fact that he married a Canadian, she complimented him. She gave him, he was no longer a green one. You follow? He already had verstanden in ganz gut was geht on in Canada. When he needed advice, his Eishet Nurim could give him advice. And he built the Beisach. Beisach was named in his memory until today. He respected women, tremendous respect for women, which may be part of what he got in Yeshiva Jachle Chachle Lubin, Rav Landau. For example, respected women. Also, I can tell you about Shapiro. There are endless stories when he visited America and well-to-do women. He knew exactly how to become their rabbi. And it brought him a lot of support. The research just, you know, what surfaces and outcomes. Unbelievable. Just the whole story with Philadelphia, with a lady from Philadelphia. Ah. Beautiful, beautiful. So he, Montreal was his. There was a rabbi, Avraham Mordechai Hirschsprung, who wound up in Mexico City. He became chief rabbi of Mexico. A good deal of the Yiddishkeit you have in Mexico today, he brought all in, including the Sephardim. There's a whole, you know, it's a Sephardic country to begin with. And today it's, I deal with this Mexico, my son. It's a near the aim of Israel, and also a good aliyah. And Rabbi Avraham Mordechai Hirschsprung plays a role. Then there's someone who I knew, Rabbi Yehuda Pereira Abramowitz. No, you recognize the name? He was a Chavei Knesset. Holy Aguda, then Agudat Yisrael, a Hasidic Jew, filled with warmth and understanding. His son-in-law used to daven at my minyan at the Kollel, 47 years old, my minyan, my feet work. And son-in-law davened at our minyan, big Kipasku guy. And he grew up about his father-in-law, Yachal, Sibish, and we all suffer, or we all owe a vote of thanks to Chavei Knesset Yehuda Meir Abramowitz. Charlie, you drove here today? Yes, sir, you drove. You put a seatbelt on? You know who introduced the law for seatbelts? Abramowitz. His law. His law. So some people are, what do I need a seatbelt for? But it saved many lives to seat belt. Yisrael Meir, we owe him the thank you. He already, you see, he was like the Meir Shapiro. He was able to move between Aguda, Poli Aguda, and I'll say it quietly, and even the Mizrahi, he understood that that which unites us is much more important than that which divides us. And that was Chaver Knesset Yehuda Meir Avraham. I have a feeling I taught members of his family in Mikvala, Mystic graduates, if you know what I'm talking about, Israelis. Now, there's another name, another survivor, who he chopped my head off. I still don't know why until today, but when you succeed in life and you do some good things, I have to tell you to get this campus for Torah. You can be brought and never get upset with anyone. Rav Chaim Kriesworth, do you recognize the name? Who was here from Chicago?
Rising.
He was a Rosh Hashiva in Chicago. And then he wound up chief rabbi in Antwerp, in Belgium. He founded a yeshiva in Jerusalem that succeeds until today, Mekhaz HaTorah. Yeah, it's in Talpiyot, as I recall. I remember visiting there years ago. And they said he also had a photographic memory of them. How did he chop his head off, my head off? There was a young man in the Kollel whose family had come in Aliyah from Chicago. They knew Rav Chaim Kriesworth from Skokie, from what you call Skokie today, Hebrew Theological College. So there was a Sheva Brachas on a Friday morning. He got married. That this particular individual, to the best of my knowledge, may still be in Baltimore. He went into his father-in-law's real estate business, as I recall. Could be, he still listens to my shiurim. He was a Talmud of mine in the Kollel, very devoted Talmud. And they asked me to speak that Friday morning. Rav Chaim Kriesworth heard of this, a Simcha, Chicago family. So he came that Friday morning, walked in while I was speaking. I remember it was Chanukah. Thought I got to talk. It was a powerful talk, quoting the Rav and quoting the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And I hit him off my talk that you're a young man yet, you can go further, and you have to be great in Torah, and you're a Shemaya, you know, inspiration. Bucky and Shas and Poskin, not enough that you're getting smicha, but build them. And he gets up to talk. They asked him to speak next. He walked in, no one invited him. He heard from Jerry. And he starts speaking. I couldn't believe my ears. That's right. I must get up from Shkater and even Shemaya. Oh, you want to translate? I don't want to translate. But essentially, what he said, how could a guy who's clean shaven and dresses and Western clothes, how can he know anything about Torah and Yerid Shemaya? A rotten, vicious, malicious, hideous thing that would just depraved, degenerate, the bad, surreptitious individual. And he's talking about Torah and Yerid Shemaya. Well, anyway, I came home. I said, I'll tell you the one from the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Said it a million times over the years, but the same thing. It was a miracle part. We went to Yudket Kislev, a whole group from YU. So, you know, it was the 50s. The Rebbe was first beginning, conquering the world. So, all right, Hasidim will say the Rebbe knew the Ruach HaKodesh that there's some YU bodies. I think one of the Gavayim said, Rebbe, since the click from Yeshiva University, you're going to hit the Rebbe. There's a clique of young students. So the Rebbe begins talking. He says, Baruch Hashem, the Makabim. I'm saying it in Yiddish. I'll try to say it in English, but it's a struggle. Baruch Hashem, the Makabim, thank God. Why? Because imagine if the Maccabim or the Tfakim, they come into the Beis HaMikdash, they find one cruse of oil, they say, well, we have to worry, we'll send up north. The the Rav explains it takes 3 days to get there, 1 day is Shabbos, and 3 days to come back with pure olive oil.
You're not obligated to light the Hanukkah candles.
Forget it. Wait 7 days. Moshe, we have to live normally. They heard Rav Kepit Sunday Shia. I'm not drinking milk. There would have been no Hanukkah. Thank God they were Hasidim. And Zain Gizen Apach Shemin, Yomo Mitzvah Habali Yatza, Al Tachmin Sun. That's why we have Hanukkah. So I said to Malcolm, maybe anyway, Saturday night, I get a knock on my door. Hatan and his father made a trip from Hanof to Avia to apologize to me. They were in tears. We didn't know them. But until today, I don't know why he chopped my head off. All I can say is what I said a minute ago, the clean shaving and the no black and white and the face, you know. Wow. Okay. If you really want the truth, I don't know, I get older. I don't mean it has to tell the truth. Rav Chaim Kreisworth, how do you pronounce his name? Kreisworth. Rav Chaim Kreisworth had Ruach HaKodesh. What happened was when he walked in, the uncle of the Chatan knew him from Chicago. And the uncle was angry at him. It had been some business. And he whispered to me, Lashon Hara, about Chicago, where this guy was in. I figured out that he had Ruach HaKodesh. He heard that whisper and he decided to tell off the poor guy who was Makabel, or at least listened to the uncle's critique. That uncle is very famous until today. He's very close to Rabbi Yosef HaLevi Soloveitchik, also one of the great tzaddikim I've known in my life. So maybe that's the reason. They had Ruach HaKodesh, and that way Rav Kepit comes out of it okay, and Reisman comes out of it okay. And 40, take your choice. Just like locusts, you want to eat, you don't want to eat milk, drink, no, yes. Kugel without salt, you want to enjoy. I praised your kugel yesterday. You missed it. Without oil, Norm Schletz, who's an expert in food, enjoyed the shiur yesterday. He understood what they're. Look at his face. Take a look. Okay. It's worth just looking at his face. Are you related by any chance? Yeah, because somehow, he has a Yichus birthright. Let me end off with a few more students. I have to clear the room to give them a chance to breathe with Rabbi Bednar's Shia. A few more students, very fascinating. Rabbi Israel Dohn. No, anyone recognize that name? He later became, in my time, one of the main spokesmen in the Elohims for the Torah Katan. And this too is part of life. You can have the same teachings, the same atmosphere. Not everyone comes out thinking the same. And he was in the Torah Katanik with all that implies. It's not simple. And he too was a graduate of Yeshiva Chachmei Lublin. If I'm not mistaken, he lived in London. It can be checked out. I believe in Stanford Hill.
Yes, you all know.
And he had a tremendous impact on a certain element. That element continues until today. For better or for worse, I can tell you a little story which you all should remember about 10 years ago. There was a big incident here with the Shlomo Chassidim that they, in their Beis Yaakov, they built the wall that the Hasidic girls should not see the Sephardi girls going to the Beis Yaakov because they're not dressed to their standard. Anyway, they were arrested. They refused to take the wall down, and many of them went to jail from the Shlomo. Max. They never had it so good. From London, from Dome's Crowd, they got $100 a week for being in jail. As some of them said when they got out, halavai, we could have been in jail longer. Follow me? And this is Stamford Hill, and it still exists. I have a lot of heartache personally, because I know Talmidim, the previous Lenin Rebbe, was ashamed of her. But what goes on now, and some remained and some left, but when you leave, hold on 1 second, Max, I can't hear, but hold on. When you leave Hasidus, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. They don't want to elaborate further. And finally, taking it right down to Rabbi Drach's backyard, Rabbi Yonah Force, Rosh Yeshiva Nitra, was a product of Yeshiva Tachmik. So it's a very fascinating story. Success, tears, how it ends. But what Meir Shapiro lives on, the Daf Yomi, his Talmidim, the yeshiva that we spoke about in B'nai Brak, we'll talk about more of his Talmidim. We'll talk about in depth. I'm going to introduce you to some new volumes that perhaps you've never held in your hands. We're going to deal with Rabbi Schaumer, Rabbi Landau. We're going to deal with memoir literature by his students. We're going to deal with how they were saved. And Be'ezrat Hashem, at a certain point, will take off our beards, our payas, our bekishes, and we're in Yeshiva Kozleshen, which is such a different. But all we have to do is pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for Ketiva B'chatima Tova, L'chnachayim, Osher V'Osher, and Yomo, most important, you know my age and all the emails I get, every breath I get is good health, continued strength, and that's the brach of need for us, for you, children, and children, our great grandchildren, and to Lachagdil Torah Lachadira. We have a lot more to do here. We need your help. Yomo, I'm assigning you to start a colony in Tel Aviv. Bring over as many Russian Jews as you can. Could you imagine in Tel Aviv, they will not allow outdoor services with the pizza. Mayor Diesengoff is turning over in this grave. This is what all the reports are saying. See? Okay, now, we've brought you to this point. Yomo, 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 no talk. I brought you to this point. I pick up October 15th, I think it is. I have the right date. It's the Sunday, Monday, 1 week after Sukkot ends. The Kolo begins that Tuesday, and we obviously begin Sunday, Monday, the week later. I pick up exactly where I left off with Locust and with finishing up Yeshiva Chachmei Lublin. Are there any questions from anyone here now? Okay, Yomo, open it up to the road. Max, yes?
Yeah. Doctor, speaking about a specific book.
Of course, Derek Hasidim, Elsa Hasidim, Rakepit spent the whole day there, and as a result of that day, a great section of British Torah became Mizrachiites. The influence of one little individual, Yomo, opened it up to the world, made their comments. Yeah. His mother is his wife.
Cyril Dome.
His mother is Cyril Dome's sister. No, it's from that family.
Yeah.
It's from that family. Rabbi Rimon's mother.
Ah.
And so no wonder he knows English. Yeah. There's English, he knows English. I taught his sister.
He was born in his mother, I mean, I knew his mother, go back to England.
But one second, his English is fluent?
Yeah.
Wow, so no wonder he can speak all over the world. Wow, terrific. And I taught his sister, she was a real sweetheart of a human being.
She stayed with us.
Mona. Ah, wow. Small world. My wife was very close to his sister because they both did masters at the Mechalari Library of Science.
Brother.
Right. Wow. Now, he's a, Lord, you don't realize what we've created here. We have turned out Rabban and Dayan and Oskim, who were part and parcel of the Israeli scene. See, that was Yesh Mayayin. And it begins with Rav Kook, but the real development is in the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, Rav Moshe Tzvi Neri, Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kook, you have no idea. I only suffer. I would have loved to have shown Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kook my essay on Herzl. Ah, if anyone would have appreciated, he had up and she came into his house. On one side, that was his father looking at you, and on the other side, opposite, was Rav Herzl, Binyamin Zev Herzl. And then I also had the Ein Mazal Yisrael. Shalom Gold died before I could show it. I waited, and I said, let me finish it properly, and it's Akmas now. That's life.